Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure. Well, first of all, you're here for It's About the Relationship, IT and Academic Affairs Partner to Support Faculty. And it's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Craig Fowler, the Chief Information Officer, and Dr. Anna McFadden, the Director of Academic Engagement and IT Governance at Western Carolina in North Carolina. So I will ask you folks to fill out a survey, if you would be kind enough, to go online and fill out a survey afterwards about the presentation. And I don't know about you folks, but I'm very interested to learn more about their model of governance and see how we can apply it to our own institution. So without any further ado.
Thank you. Let's see. Good afternoon. My name is Craig Fowler, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for Western Carolina University. And it's a pleasure for us to be able to talk with you this afternoon. Anna McFadden is a colleague, and so her current position is our Director of Academic Engagement and IT Governance. Previous to this, she was the Director for our Coulter Faculty Commons, which you'll be hearing a lot about this. So she has come from the academic side of the house and has been a professor in our educational leadership area and has now become part of our IT organization. So today what we'd like to be able to do is talk a little bit about the relationship and what it means, especially between IT and academic affairs. And so we'll talk a little bit about, first off, what is Western, give you a description about the history of the partnership with the Coulter Faculty Commons, some of the unique parts of the organization, some of the outcomes and achievements we've had, some lessons learned, kind of our next step that we have underway in this relationship, and then hopefully we'll have time for some Q&A to talk. So first off, Western Carolina University. This is a picture of our campus here. We are located an hour from Asheville, North Carolina, and also 30 minutes from the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. So we are in a beautiful part of the country. We're actually located in Cullowhee, afterwards I'll spell that for you if you're interested. But that is Cherokee for the Valley of the Lilies. We love the location that we're in. We have about 9,400 students. There's about 1,500 faculty and staff. We are number three out of the whole University of North Carolina system. We're part of that system with respect to our online programs. One of our distinctives that we try to have is actually what we refer to as engaged learning. Where our students can have hands-on experiences in their field of study. The past 2 years, we've received the President's Award for Service Learning with Distinction, which we're very proud of. So with that, Anna, I'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. As Craig said, my recent appointment at the university was the director of the Coulter Faculty Commons for Excellence in Teaching and Learning. We used to call it the Coulter Faculty Center, and then because our legislature decided they wanted to try a 20% budget cut on any entity that had the word center in the title, we changed our name to the Coulter Faculty Commons because Commons did really fit what we had come to represent in the university. I want to recognize Bob Orr, who's in the audience today. Bob was assistant CIO at Western when all of this that I'm about to describe started to take place, and he was a part of the conversation. Basically, what was happening was that faculty were indicating some dissatisfaction with educational technology services. And the Faculty Senate became involved, and there was a survey generated that indicated some dissatisfaction. And what faculty were asking for was a one-stop place, one place they could go for all of their resources. And, you know, gee, wouldn't it make sense that if I went for help with my teaching, I could also at the same place get help with educational technology. So this centralized support idea started to germinate, and the provost appointed a committee, and on that committee were representatives from academic affairs and distance education, office of the provost, the faculty senate president. And they came up with this concept, and at that point I was hired. And I came in, I had been a faculty member and department head in the Department of Educational Leadership and Foundations. And my job was to create this new entity, and that was about 5 years ago. And I spent about 3 months doing an extensive needs assessment, basically going around and talking to different groups, faculty deans, faculty senators, IT people, what would this service look like? And so what we came up with was the Coulter Faculty Commons. And this is a picture of what is the center of that entity called the Faculty Sandbox, the place where faculty can come and play. And if you could see the picture a little more closely, the gentleman in the front of the picture is actually an instructional developer. He's a PhD in educational psychology, and he works with faculty on the pedagogy, and he also works closely with another gentleman who at that time was a digital media lecturer. He was our expert in podcasting and wikis and blogs and movies, and they would work together in helping a faculty member plan a course. And so we put this group together, and there's a fairly recent picture of the staff. And we created a new advisory board. We tried to be sure that every college was represented. We tried to be sure that educational outreach or distance learning was represented, as well as IT. And the mission was to focus on teaching and learning support to enhance student engagement through active learning and the appropriate use of educational technology. And we decided we needed to become data-driven. Okay, we weren't collecting any data about what we were doing or how well we were doing it or what our processes were. And so the services, as the center exists today, you can see on the right side of the screen those traditional faculty development services in a traditional faculty center. How to develop a syllabus, how to design a course, teaching observation and feedback. We do things like go in a faculty member's classroom, send the faculty member out and talk to the students about midway through the semester, get feedback about the course. It's the best feedback a faculty member ever receives. It's confidential. And then we give a report to the faculty member. We've also developed that process for online classes. We go into the classroom in online discussion with the students and get feedback from the students about the course and give that to the faculty member. It is without a doubt the most popular service in the center. We also are a campus that adopted the Boyer model of scholarship, so the Center for Teaching and Learning is very involved in how do we do that. How do we engage students in research to be a part of that, partners with faculty? Research design and support we provide, as well as online pedagogy. We developed our own quality assessment tool for online courses. We took Quality Matters. We looked at other research and teaching and learning online. And we had some very accomplished faculty develop our own online course assessment tool. They did validity and reliability testing on this, and it's used for self-assessment and for course development. And then we combine that with the services we provide for academic technology. Now, the system administrator for Blackboard, which is our learning management system, the system administrator is actually located in data and applications. But the Blackboard support team is in the Coulter Faculty Commons. The support for Wemba, which we use for virtual classroom, is in the Coulter Faculty Commons. We are an iTunes University site. We teach. We have one professor who's teaching Japanese through iTunes University, and his course is being accessed all over the world. Second Life, we have used Second Life and built a courtroom that our criminal justice students use where they practice some of what they're learning. We do wikis and blogs on WordPress. We do podcasting, and also we support research software. So what does this look like? Here's the organizational chart. And you'll see at the top the director. And I tried to structure this so that you would understand the funding stream To the left are funds from the Office of the Provost. This is academic affairs funding, and it funds the salary of the director as well as the office manager and another administrative support specialist, two instructional developers, some student workers. We have a distinguished professor position, a distinguished professor for educational technologies that is located in the Coulter Faculty Commons, and three faculty fellows. These are three faculty members who have either a course release or they're provided a stipend, and those are in the area of publications, research design, and the scholarship of teaching and learning. And then from information technology, we have a training specialist, we have the learning management system team leader, and the folks who report to her. We have a digital media lecturer, and that position funding is split, part from academic affairs, part from IT. And then we have the person who manages our faculty sandbox as well as student workers. So these folks come together, and they work together in one entity across divisions. The director sits as a member of the IT Leadership Council with the other directors in IT and also reports to the Associate Provost for Academic Affairs. So how has it worked? One of the things that really helped was becoming data-driven. And we, our university and IT, adopted Sharewell software for data management collection, help desk. And one of the things we liked about it so much was that it was so easy to customize. And so we took that software and we developed a list of absolutely every service we were delivering in the Coulter Faculty Commons. We made it very granular. We developed every category of every service. And we were able to develop some data I'm going to show you in just a second that we took to our chancellor and our provost when we were facing this possible 20% budget cut and said, look at what we're doing. Look at how it's tied to the mission of the university. And they did some successful lobbying that basically said, let's not cut every center 20%. Let's let the universities decide individually how they will deal with budget cuts. And we were able to pass that by and we landed safely there. Another way it really helped us was that when Craig came on board as our CIO, we faced a freeze on hiring. And the only way we could hire positions was to go through a very rigorous justification. You must have this position. The only way you'll get it is if it's critical to the mission of the university. Well, as it happened, we had some positions in the learning management system area that were absolutely mission critical, and we had some very good Sharewell data that we had collected to back that up. And using that data, Craig was able to go to the executive council and chancellor and say, let's get these positions filled, and we were successful. Also, he had the opportunity to talk to the Board of Trustees about academic technology at Western Carolina University, and a lot of the data we had collected, the model we used, was very useful. We also participated, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Pew Charitable Trust and their work with large course redesign, and we did some work with three courses that showed some success with using academic technology to lower DWF rates, to raise grades, and so we took that and publicized that, made that very visible in the campus. And because of our work with data, we were recognized by Campus Technology this past summer as one of their innovators, one of 11 award winners, and we were recognized in the area of governance and policy. And there we are on the cover. There's Craig and I are on the cover, and Beth Lopwith, who is our associate provost, was also in that picture. So what did our data tell us? In addition to the Sharewell data we collected on our types of services, we did our survey. We redesigned our survey of faculty to ask some specific questions. And this was a satisfaction survey. And you notice that when we add up very satisfied and satisfied, with technology support, 93%, teaching and learning support, 96%, and overall 94% satisfaction rate. But the one that I was really interested in, you know, if you provide support for faculty development and technology or teaching, what you really want to know is what's different. So we asked faculty, did you change your practice? And we also collected qualitative data in the open-ended section of the survey where we asked them to describe the different things that they had done. 78% said they had changed their practice as a result of participation. And I love that one piece of data because we had a meeting with our chancellor, and he picked up on that 78%. And in several meetings later, I heard him quote that. You know, it became like the elevator speech. And I said, yes, you know, the data is working, 78%. Also, we were able to show through the use of our data that from 1 year to the next, we had a 36% increase in our services. The last year, we served 989 faculty, staff, and students. Okay? And students. We even took student questions. No, we're faculty commons. As compared to the previous year of 670, and look at the number of services, 3,761. A 36% increase. So that's how we were able to be successful in some of the funding and not getting certain budget reductions. And we also use at our university the HDI index rating. And we overall had a 4.82 out of 5 for satisfaction. We were able to get that data on each of our employees. I, as director, was able to look at the Sharewell data of each of my employees. I was able to look at their HDI data. All of this data was tied to their staff evaluation. So the data became very important. The data became the subject of every weekly staff meeting. How are we doing this week? Let's look at our data. What is our data telling us? And there you see a breakdown of services. And I'm going to let Craig talk with you about what all this means, what we learned, and how this experience was a metaphor for the next steps we're beginning to take in building our relationships between IT and academic affairs.
Thanks, Anna. So what did we learn out of this so far? So first off, it is very important to be visible. And I think Ann and I would both say we've used a good bit of shoe leather as we've walked across campus. And when you saw that picture, there are hills there, and we did have to walk up and down a few of them. But it's very important to have to listen. And one of the things that, you know, as we go out and we meet with faculty is really trying to ask questions about, so what are you really trying to do? What's the purpose? What are the goals? What's the outcome of what you're trying to do? Of course, sometimes when we sit down, the first thing we hear is, well, I need this tool, and here it is, and we found it in this magazine or on this website. Sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily need a tool to achieve the results. And so we have to work and talk and through those kind of things. Sometimes there's some compromises and all. Also, you need to be sure and do some advocating. And I think, you know, as Anna mentioned, one of the things is we started to talk with people both on the staff side and even with some of our board members. We found out that the use of academic technology and how we were doing it across the campus and in our classes was not well understood. So we came up with the idea of creating a video. And we actually did a 10-minute video. We got faculty to be engaged. We actually had one of the faculty from our stage and screen area to do the narration for it, and we ended up actually showing that at a Board of Trustees meeting with them, and that was actually very well received because a lot of folks, if you look at it, you know, they're thinking back to the way that we went to school, and I'll tell you, the technology we're using is nowhere near what's being done today, and to be able to do that and have some understanding was good. Collaboration and coordination across different areas is very important. One of the things that we have underway is what we call our e-briefcase project, which is for an educational briefcase. It's really a portfolio where a student, while they're at Western, will contribute to this portfolio, and then we'll be able to assess the outcomes of that as to how well they have grown and matured and all during that time. Well, this was from the academic affairs side out of our accreditation and our quality improvement program. So academic affairs and all that's very engaged with that. The Coulter Faculty Commons is the place that the faculty go to understand how to use a briefcase and what it's all about. And so we have to be engaged with that. The third component is from an IT perspective, and we have set up a technology commons where students come, and not only do they get their PC repaired and help desk questions and those kind of things, but it's also a place where they come to learn about some of the tools and techniques that the faculty is learning in the faculty commons. And so we run this area. It's called Class Tips. And so we have staff and students there to help them to learn how do you use an educational briefcase. We're in the process of beginning our first major rollout of that this semester. We have 700 freshmen this semester going through it. The others will pick it up this next semester. But the coordination that it takes for academic affairs, IT, and for the faculty commons to all work together, that takes a lot of work to do. Another major area, and I think you've probably picked it up from Anna's comments, has been that data matters. And the first thing is that it is powerful, and it does drive decisions, and it does drive allocations. I look at it to say that, data is better than an anecdote. And anecdotes, we've got a lot of them across campus, but really trying to take it and really dive down into data is a big plus through it. Anything you can do to tie it to student learning and to the mission is the thing to do. And when you're able to say that you've had over 700,000 iTunes used downloads and how many students are using certain things, that's a big plus, and it certainly does get people's attention. And the other thing, as Anna talked about, then being able to take that and tie that into staff evaluations. And these are not used to go beat up on people. This is used to help us to get better and for our staff to grow and to become better professionals through this. Also, faculty voice is very critical. Faculty voice doesn't always equal decision making. It's input. It's important to listen. It's important to make changes through that. Anna, in both her roles, attends the Faculty Senate. So to be able to say that IT is represented at every Faculty Senate meeting, that is a big plus, and it keeps us on board and understanding what's important to faculty and also whether or not there's any other particular issues. One of the things that we did in the case of our new learning management system, and, we are migrating currently to Blackboard 9, we really went a good ways in looking at this faculty voice. We ran surveys with all the faculty. We held open forums through that. We did online wikis and blogs and those kind of things to solicit input. Also, we had a pilot for one of the systems that we did not use on campus. But we had some faculty that we solicited to be able to actually run that, and so to get some additional feedback. The good thing about it was is that when it came down to the decision to make between the provost and myself, it actually became very easy because we had the data, we had the faculty inputs with it, and it was a very open process through that. Some other things, transparency is a key. And for us, one of the tools that we're using is what we refer to as total cost of ownership or total cost of operations. As we went through the learning management system, one of the things that we put together as a set of data was what is the trade-offs in actually running each one of, we were down to two systems, which one. And we looked at over the next 5 years, what was going to be the total cost to run these? How much support was it going to take? How many servers were we going to have? What were licensing costs? What were support costs? All of those kind of things were rolled into it. One of the other things we calculated into that was what was the cost of change, or how many hours was a faculty member going to have to to spend in order to move from one system to another, because faculty time is not free through that. And so that was a key piece. And the more you can share and the more transparent things can be, the better. And one of the things I've learned since being there for just a little over a year is the faculty really want to know why, and being able to explain that through it. The other thing is that IT and academic affairs can learn from each other. One of the things from an IT perspective that we bring is we're pretty much data-focused, and we're also very process-focused. Data and process focus is not usually a trait on the faculty side, but it's very important if you're going to be running things and running systems through that. And I think Anna talked a little bit about, you know, the power of data and what you can do through that. So we've been spending a lot of time learning back and forth from each other. One of the things that the academic affairs side has taught the IT through this is, Anna said, the director of the Commons sits on the IT Leadership Council. And so as we're going through different things, IT is continually getting this input about, ooh, I think you're stepping on something here. This isn't going to go over well here. Do you understand how faculty do certain things? And that's been very important for us. Now, I know one of the things we've talked about from an IT perspective has been about cost, and we think about dollars. But from a faculty perspective, they think about hours. And so we have begun to adopt that in part of our language to say we don't talk to necessarily go out and talk to faculty about dollars, but we do talk to them about hours, and that's made a big difference. So, you know, this relationship and being able to learn and understand. So what's next for us as we go forward? So the Faculty Commons has been kind of the first place that we've done this with academic affairs and with IT. One of the next steps here is what we refer to as our IT governance and prioritization process. Western has not had a governance process that looks across the organization and across the university as to what's going on and allow us to make university-level decisions about where we should go. So we have set this up. This is brand new. It was approved by our executive council in August. And the structure here is to set up three different committees, one around academic technology, one on administrative, and the other is on infrastructure. And so each one concentrates in their particular area. They will then feed up prioritizations, projects, policies, those kind of things into what we're referred to as IT Council. The IT Council shared by the CIO. On the council, on the IT council, and the three advisory committees are faculty representation. We've put that in place across all of those. And on the IT council, as well as the academic one, we've also got a student representative on that also. So the goal here is for us to be able to take a look at what kind of standards should we have across campus? What are some of our priorities? Do they mirror where the university is trying to go? One of my personal goals out of this is I would love for us to get to the point that we could end up with a three-year roadmap of projects and capabilities that we would like to have in each one of these areas, because then that can drive us with respect to funding and staffing and other resources that we may need through this. And we're very committed to trying to make this a transparent process, to be able to talk about different things. We've established a set of initial criteria. You can't go through this kind of a process without saying, so what's the criteria we're going to measure things against? And we've established six different criteria through that. And then, of course, all of this brings into recommendations back to the Executive Council. So, in summary, you know, the Coulter Faculty Commons was a key first step and to really bring IT and academic affairs together. We are trying to work together to make this, you know, a better institution. Relationships, you know, they grow through purposeful interaction. You know, one of the things that you do is you don't want to show up only when there's a problem, you know. Show up when there's not a problem. Show up to find out what's going on. Show up to find out how you can collaborate together. One of the interesting things that's happened recently now is that our computer information systems program came to IT and said, we're very interested in setting up an advisory board for our program. One, we'd like you, Craig, to be on it, but the second thing is, can you help advise us for people to also be on it from the rest of industry and all? We're also working with them now to change the way that we actually equip hardware and that for what they do, because they aren't able to actually refresh some things on some of the same schedule that we're doing from within IT, and we're actually working out a way now that we can share the equipment that IT has and actually be able to use that in instruction. And then thirdly, we're talking with them now about how we can implement some kind of an internship with some of their students actually into IT on campus and enhance their programs. So all of this starts to come from, you know, working together and being out there. Now, all of this is not, you know, just a happy day in the woods on a hike. There is conflict that comes along, and not everything, you know, now the question becomes, how do you handle that and how do you work through that? I can tell you the way not to handle it is to throw the email grenades back and forth. That'll do. That'll kill it fast. So it's very important to sit down and to talk and to work through some things and to really explain and understand each other's perspectives through this. Now, some things you may not be able to fully reach consensus with, and sometimes some difficult decisions have to be made. But it will be made where everybody understands at least everybody's take on this and what the data and the information and, you know, in some cases we've got compliance and regulations and those kind of things that we have to do. So with that, I'd like to say thank you very much for listening to us this afternoon. I hope this has been helpful. And I think we've got, you know, a good amount of time for some questions and all. So, okay. Okay. So I'm going to let Anna start off with parts of this. But the question was about how do you handle potentials with the culture differences and that kind of perspective from between the IT and academic affairs, and how do you bring that together?
I think that's why my position was created. Why I was hired. I think I'm like the official translator for IT to the academic area. I've been at the university for 14 years. I've been a faculty member. I got into IT through just teaching everything online and that way. So my role is to help IT understand what are the words that we need to use as we talk to the campus, and to help the campus understand what it is that IT is talking about. The governance process that Craig has described is something that is a part of my job description to manage, so that when a faculty member says, I need this, then I or one of my team will go sit down and talk with them to talk about what is it that you're trying to do. You know, sometimes we may already have a solution that the person doesn't know about. And we found a situation like that in a department last week. They had no idea there was something on campus that would already do what they wanted to do. So it's that liaison role that I think that helps with what you're describing.
So, and I just add to that from a culture perspective. My whole history has been in private industry and just came into this higher education world a year ago. So I've been on the fast learning curve through parts of this. And so, you know, there's a little bit of some culture back and forth, too, between how does that translate into some things. But, you know, for me, some of the things with data and really being looking at that and saying where's that going and how do we use it is very important. For it. Also, the areas around process and trying to make sure we have that and is it documented and do we follow it and those kind of things. Sure.
You mentioned earlier about actually going into the classroom and soliciting students for feedback. Do you have a system in place for doing that? And are courses reevaluated on a timeline? Or just kind of just try to get as much as you can?
Okay, I'm going
to. You want to repeat that? That is a totally voluntary confidential service offered by the Coulter Faculty Commons. We did around 120 of those last year. And faculty members like them so much that they typically come back and request each semester. And then they have an option. We give them a report, and some of them choose to put that in their tenure and promotion files to show that they have worked on their teaching. They might put it in their faculty evaluation files. And sometimes department heads will recommend that faculty do that, but we have a confidentiality policy. We don't give that information to anybody. Because if the center becomes perceived as a remediation, people won't go. And we do have forms for it. It's a process, and if you're interested, you can email me, and I'll send that to you. We are a regional comprehensive university. We have a help desk. We outsource our LMS support, our Tier 1 support. So faculty will call the help desk for that, and that goes to the for outsourced, and then the Tier 2 calls come to us. The reality with being a campus of 9,000 students and around 500 faculty is that the faculty get to know our folks, and they figure out their extensions, and they call them anyway, okay? Or they walk in, and, you know, that's what we do. Our technology commons, our students, it's the same way. You know, they walk in, they get that kind of help. So I guess we're kind of a smaller operation in that regard.
Sure, all the way in the back.
Okay, we took each of the major services in the Culture Faculty Commons. Okay, for instance, digital media support, that became a major category, and we divided that up into podcasting, you know, movies, all of that. And so when sometimes a call will come into the help desk, and a person may say, I want assistance with so-and-so. Well, we'll follow up with that individual. But if the person comes to us, let's just say they walk in, we will still enter that service into ShareWell to indicate that we did it. And the really neat thing about it is because it's tied to Active Directory, we can pull up every faculty member's participation record. And we create a letter for every faculty member by April 1st every year that says, Dear Anna McFadden, thank you for participating in the Culture Faculty Commons this year. These are the things you did to improve your teaching. And the faculty member puts that in their annual faculty evaluation file or tenure and promotion file because our TPR document, our tenure and promotion document, says faculty members have to demonstrate what they do to improve their teaching. So the database not only gives us this great information, but we can set it up by faculty member. And I can put you in touch with someone there who can tell you exactly how they've done it if you're interested. Just email me.
So I would like to add one point to that, and that is that by having both the faculty commons information as well as the IT information all into the same system, into the same database, then we are also be able to look at correlations going on, you know, if there's particular problems or some other kind of things that are happening there also. So we get a good picture of what's happening either particular for a faculty or a department or whatever, if there's particular issues or problems with that. The other thing that we've implemented has been what we call our root cause analysis team. We've now put that in place, and that is not only for just IT people, but also from the faculty commons are on this. And really what we're trying to look at is what's been the key things that's happened over this past month, what's been the ones that have been the most critical, what's been the items that we've had occur most during this, what's impacted faculty and students, and really take more of a holistic view of it. Typically within the IT place, it's one of those, well, you know, these are all the kind of server things we've been having, and these are all the desktop things, and these are all, but by being able to do that, and it's a cross-functional team across all of IT and with the faculty commons, we're now able to take a look at this and start to see, do we see patterns? Do we see things happening? And it's really been kind of interesting. We've only been doing this for less than 6 months. But we're starting to see things happen, and people start to go after some things that have actually been nagging us for a while. But nobody ever saw it as a more holistic issue that we needed to go address. And so that's been a good thing for us. The other side benefit to that has been that it has really shrunk some of these silos across the different areas that people are – it's actually enhanced the way people are working together. Across that. The other thing that we're doing from a strategic perspective is really trying to separate incidents, which are problems, you know, something's not working, from service requests. And that's been one that we're continuing to work on. We're trying to get more to where we can help automate some of those. But that's very important for us in trying to figure out how to go work particular items, you know, whether or not it's something broken or there's some other kind of request. So.
This was an effort that was led by our distinguished professor for educational technologies and quite a scholar. He's now retired, just retired last year in the area of e-learning. And he worked with a group of faculty who I would call our power users with online teaching and learning. And they wanted something that they felt was much more comprehensive than Quality Matters. And they wanted something that was a Western Carolina University document. So they spent a lot of time reading the literature. And one of those professors was a research faculty member who handled all the validity and reliability testing of that document. So we felt very, very good that it was something that they created, they owned, and had a WCU brand on it, if that makes sense. And it is available online. If you go to the Western site and go to the Culture Faculty Commons site, but it would be quicker probably for you to email me and I can send it to you. No, they used Quality Matters in their research. Okay. I would say we're moving more and more towards self-help and online. We did some, as we're moving in this Blackboard migration, we did some training for districts, training for our faculty at our districts using WIMBA. We have created our own online certification course using Blackboard 9 to get faculty used to that. We've done some video tutorials. And as the campus continues to grow, which it is supposed to do, that's going to become more important. A lot of it's face-to-face, but because we are having more and more faculty teaching at a distance, we're having to do more and more online. I'm sure there is one. Gosh, I could probably call up a few faculty right now and they could tell you. Yes, I can tell you one that we're working with right now that we haven't completely figured out. We have a program in the university that wants to create a community of their current students, graduates, and they want it to be perpetual, live forever, without any FERPA concerns. Okay? And even though it may be related to teaching and learning. So if anybody has a solution, please let us know. we're still exploring the possibility of a perpetual learning community with students without any concerns about FERPA. Well, that one isn't resolved yet that I just shared with you, okay? We actually had a situation where some faculty were going off and doing some things kind of outside of the scope of what we do that were questionable in terms of FERPA, and they may still be doing that for all we know. So that's not resolved. That's the one I can think of.
I mean, the only one that I can think of right now is one that we're actually currently going through. It has to deal with a security concern. Ann and I are actually going to be going to the Faculty Senate here in 2 weeks to talk with them through it and to explain some things. We'll see how that gets resolved. I will say through parts of that, we have been working on this particular thing since the first of the year. We've held 4 faculty open forums during this time. We've published multiple emails and other kind of things. We have put a video of one of our open forums on the web for faculty to see, and those kind of things, helping to make sure we get all the proper information out. I will say that, communicating across faculty, across the whole campus, is not an easy task through that and getting all the proper information out. But we are working that particular one here soon. Some people view that what we're trying to do is going to be impacting the way that they work and the way that they interact with students. And we feel like we've tried to take a good balanced approach, and we're trying to share that data and that understanding to come to resolution through it. Other questions?
I think our time is about up. We want to thank you, and we'll be happy to stay here for a few minutes and chat with you individually. Thank you so much.